is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning at KGMI. I'm going to start out with our weekly commentary. And is the job market really that strong? You know, if you look at the headlines about the monthly payroll report, the job market has looked surprisingly strong in recent months. Non-farm payrolls rose 275,000 in February, beating the consensus expected 200,000 as well as the average of 229,000 per month in the past year. But a deeper look at the data makes it look about as fishy as week-old sushi. Now, we're not aligning some sort of deep state conspiracy. We'll leave that to others. But reviewing the report in its entirety shows the job market is not nearly as strong as the top-line payroll reading suggests. For example, look at the revisions. Payrolls in December and January revised down by a total of 167,000. That's the largest monthly downgrade for any non-shutdown month since late 2008. Meanwhile, February was just 108,000 above the original January level. And it was even worse in the private sector, where payroll gains were a paltry 19,000 for the month after netting out revisions for prior months. So what's odd about these downward revisions is that they seem to happen pretty darn often of late. In 2023, for example, the regular two-month revision process reduced initial monthly report by 30,000 on average. That ain't chump change. In the past few decades, negative revisions like this have normally been associated with recessions or immediate aftermath of recessions. It's also important to follow civilian employment. That's an alternative measure of jobs that includes small business startups. And on a monthly basis, these figures are volatile, and they are affected by the estimates of the size of the total population, so take them with a grain of salt. But the trend is important, and it isn't anywhere as strong as payrolls. While payrolls are up 2.7 million in the past year, civilian employment is up 0.7 million, and the unemployment rate has risen by 3.9%. Moreover, the gain in civilian employment in the past year has all come in part-time work, with a slight loss for full-time jobs. There may be solid technical reasons for this large gap. The figures are generated by two different surveys, one for employers, the others for households, and maybe the massive influx in immigrants, even if largely illegal, is finding its way into the payroll expansion, perhaps with illegal hiring or false documents in a way not picked up by the civilian survey. We're guessing that many recent immigrants are not eager to answer surveys sent by the Labor Department. Notably, among those who do answer the survey, civilian employment among the native-born population is down about 900,000 from a year ago. That's the first drop since the onset of COVID, versus an increase of about 1.5 million among the foreign-born. Only time will tell the true underlying health of the labor market. There is no clear signal we're in a recession, but the patient isn't looking well. What is clear is that economic risks abound, and a soft landing is far from guaranteed. So let's take a look at our global roundup for the week, and we're seeing that inflation's last mile is going to get bumpier. Global equities were a little changed on the week amid signs that progress towards central bank inflation targets is slowing. The yield of the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury note rose 24 basis points to 4.32% from a week ago, and the price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude oil gained $3 to $80.50. Volatility, as measured by the CBOE Volatility Index, or VIX as we call it, rose to 14.7 from 14 last Friday. And we're seeing some hot inflation readings are reducing the rate cut odds. A little more than a week ago, markets priced in a 96% chance of a rate cut from the U.S. Federal Reserve by June. But in the wake of stronger-than-expected U.S. consumer and producer price indices, these odds were trimmed to 61% as investors questioned the timing and frequency of Fed rate cuts. The CPI report showed that the supercore measure which is core services except for housing, rose 0.47%, an uncomfortably high level, though an improvement over January's shocking 0.85% rise. Also notable was the first rise in goods prices in 8 months. The PPI was also firmer than expected, though analysts project that the relevant components of the index that filter through to core PCE, the price measure that the Fed targets, should decline to 0.3% in February from January's 0.42%. We're also seeing that U.S. retail sales are disappointing. The sales rebounded to less than expected 0.6% in February after declining 1.1% in January. Core retail sales, which strip out the sales of autos, gas, and building materials, were flat, while retail sales account for only about 28% of consumption. Along with the poor inflation readings, the data this week came with a whiff of stagflation. Also this week, concern grew on Wednesday's Fed dot plot. That's this next Wednesday's. Well, it'll show that the Fed policymakers anticipate cutting rates only twice in 2024, not the three times that they showed in the December dots. As wages gain, the Bank of Japan appears headed for an exit. We're seeing firmer wage settlements with Japanese labor unions, with pay hikes on the order of about 5.3%. They appear to be setting the stage for the Bank of Japan to abandon its negative rate policy at next Tuesday's rate-setting meeting. Japan's Jiji Press reported Thursday that the decision to raise its short-term policy rate to zero from 0.1%. Jiji reported that the central bank will no longer target yields when purchasing Japanese government bonds and will instead purchase a fixed amount of bonds worth 6 trillion yen a month. The Bank of Japan is also said to be considering ending equity ETF purchases. And some of our global quick hits for the week, we saw the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's February survey of consumer expectations show that one-year inflation expectations held steady at 3%. Though three-year expectations rose to 2.7% from 2.4% in January. In 5 years, respondents expected the inflation to run at 2.9%. That's up from 2.5% the month before. Consumer prices in China rose for the first time in 6 months in February, gaining 0.7%. Producer prices continued to decline, falling 2.7%. And unemployment in the United Kingdom averaged 3.9% for the 3 months ending in January. That's 0.1% higher than the quarter ending in December. However, average weekly earnings dipped to 5.6% from 5.8% the month before. That's a welcome cooling in persistent wage pressures. And under pressure from labor unions, U.S. President Joe Biden said Thursday that the U.S. steel must remain domestically owned and operated. The company had agreed in December to be acquired by Japan's Nippon Steel. And the European Central Bank announced that it will narrow the spread between its deposit rate and its main refinancing rate to 0.51% from 0.5% beginning on the 18th of September. In the United Kingdom, GDP expanded to 0.2% month over month in January after declining 0.1% in December. And by a vote of 352-65, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill on Wednesday that would ban the popular short video app TikTok in the United States if the Chinese parent company does not divest of its U.S. operations. If the bill passes the Senate, President Biden has said that he'll sign it into law. And the European Parliament this week passed sweeping legislation that imposes rules on developers of artificial intelligence applications. The mandates, which are set to take effect gradually over several years, ban certain AI users and introduce new transparency rules and require risk assessments of AI systems deemed high risk. And saying that she sees no broad-based move away from the dollar, U.S. Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen said this week that the greenback remains the global reserve currency. The S&P 500 index closed at a record 5,175.27 on Tuesday, and the International Energy Agency raised its forecast for world oil demand in 2024 by 110,000 barrels to 1.3 million barrels a day, citing a stronger U.S. economic outlook and the increased need to ship fuel as vessels are forced to take longer routes to avoid Houthi attacks in the Red Sea. New home prices in China declined for an eighth straight month in February. According to the National Bureau of Statistics, prices fell 0.3%, the same pace as in January. And on Tuesday, both President Biden and former President Donald Trump secured enough delegates to clinch their party's presidential nominations. And we saw U.S. industrial production rose 0.1% in February. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly.
Where do you go to find the best steakhouse between Seattle and Vancouver, B.C.? Northwest Washington's famed Steakhouse at Silver Reef is the place for award-winning, unforgettable fine dining. Savor our Northwest-sourced, dry-aged USDA prime steaks, finished to perfection in our 1,800-degree broiler. Immerse yourself in world-class elegance. Browse our award-winning wine and spirit list, while our attentive staff help to create lasting memories. Reservations are recommended through SilverReefCasino.com or by calling Silver Reef Casino Resort.
At Silver Reef Casino Resort, we've got that. Escape the hustle and bustle of the city and get ready for a fun and relaxation-filled getaway. Luxury hotel rooms? Yep. Championship golf? Mm-hmm. Top-rated casino with all the best slots and table games? Yes and yes. World-class dining at the region's best and wine spectator award-winning steakhouse? Yes, please. The total package is only missing one thing. You. Silver Reef Casino Resort. Located off I-5, exit 260. We've got that.
Are you eligible for Medicare soon and feeling overwhelmed by all of the insurance plan information coming your way? Call Guided Solutions, formerly Vibrant USA, at 866-733-5111. Our goal is to make your move to Medicare as seamless as possible. We specialize in the health insurance plans to go with Medicare and can review with you how Medicare works, health plan options available, and how to get enrolled. There is never a fee for our service, and with offices in Linden, Bellingham, Freeland, and Everett, help is just a phone call away.
Whatcom County and Northwest Washington offer endless beauty, and our phones make it possible for us to capture it instantly.
And now KGMI is giving you another way to share your incredible pictures with Whatcom Wanderings.
Just go to KGMI.com, look for Whatcom Wanderings, post your photos, and tell us where you took them.
So share your pictures of our area's incredible beauty and complexity with Whatcom Wanderings at KGMI.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. You can give us a call. We're asset advisors. We are located out on the Pacific Highway in the Pacific Commerce Center next to Wilson's Furniture. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And check out our website, wealthwakeup.com. Okay, we're going to continue with this week's economic report, starting out with the February Consumer Price Index report. And inflation accelerated in February, showing the battle against inflation is not over, and the last mile of getting it back down to 2%, it will be toughest. Looking at the headline, consumer prices rose 0.4% in January. That's the most in 6 months, while the 12-month comparison ticked up at 3.2%. For those wondering, this marks the 36th straight month of year-to-year change is above the Fed's 2% long-term inflation target. Looking at the details, inflation is boosted by energy prices in February, which rose 2.3% on the back of higher prices for gasoline. However, it's important to point out that energy has not been the culprit for stubbornly high inflation over the last year. Energy prices are actually down 1.9% in the same time frame. So stripping out the energy component and its often volatile counterpart, food prices, to get core prices does not make the inflation picture look any better. That measure rose 0.4% in February for the second consecutive month, meaning January's core jump was not a one-off anomaly. rental inflation, both on actual tenants and the imputed rental value of owner-occupied homes, continues to defy predictions of imminent reversal, rising 0.4% for the time frames. Housing rents have been a key driver of inflation over the last year, and this month was responsible for over a third of the rise in overall index. We expect it to continue to do so as it makes up a third of the weighting of the overall index and still hasn't caught up with the rise in home prices in the last 4 years. But the troublesome piece of the report for the Federal Reserve came from the movement in the subset category of prices that the Fed is watching closely, known as the supercore, which excludes food, energy, and other goods and housing rents. It's a useful gauge of inflation in the services sector. After jumping 0.8% in January, that measure followed up with a 0.5% increase in February, driven by higher prices for airfare up 3.6%, motor vehicle insurance up 0.9%. In the past 12 months, the measure is up 4.3%, has been accelerating as of late, up 6.9% and 5.9% annualized rates in the last 3 and 6 months, respectively. While inflation remains stubbornly high, workers are no longer being compensated for it. Case in point, real average hourly earnings declined 0.4% in February. These earnings are up 1.1% in the last year, while real average weekly earnings are up just 0.5%, underpinning the brewing weakness in the labor market. Putting this all together, the Fed has little reason at this point to start cutting rates soon. How they respond in the upcoming economic data in the months ahead could determine whether we repeat the inflationary 1970s. We also had the February Producer Price Index report come out this week. And when Chairman Powell said that the FOMC is looking for greater confidence that inflation is tending lower before it begin cutting rates, this is not what he had in mind. While consumer prices continued to run too hot for comfort, producer prices further back in the supply chain jumped 0.6% in February, easily outpacing the consensus expectations. February inflation was led by a 4.4% rise in energy prices. That's a category which had shown steady decline over the prior 4 months and is down 3.8% from a year ago. Food prices, another typically volatile category, rose 1% in February, is up 0.3% in the last 12 months. So if you strip out these two components, it shows that core prices rose 0.3% in February, followed by an outsized 0.5% increase in January. The Fed can take some solace, though, in noting that the 12-month rise in core prices is eased since peaking at 9.7% back in March of 22 and is now a more moderate 2% from a year ago. But the trend of late has turned back higher, with core prices up 2.9% in the annualized rate over the last 3 months. Diving into the details of the PPI report shows core inflation was spread between goods and services, with price for non-durable consumer goods, transportation and warehousing, and outpatient care leading the charge. Further back in the pipeline, processed goods prices rose 1.6% in February, but remained down 1.8% in the last year. Meanwhile, unprocessed good prices rose 1.2% in February, but they're down 8.3% in the last year. Further easing in inflation appears on the way should the Fed have the patience to let tighter monetary policy do its work. But inflation risks rearing its ugly head once again should the Fed falter and cut rates too quickly. The markets and the Fed itself seem unsure about how soon or how quickly rate cuts are going to come, but patience is a virtue. We also had the February retail sales report come out this week. And, you know, do not get fooled by the strong headline gain. The report was an ugly one for the U.S. consumer. Retail sales rose 0.6% in February. That's lagging the consensus expected gain of 0.8%, but with factoring in downward revisions in prior months, retail sales rose a tepid 0.1%. Much of the headline gain was driven by auto sales bouncing back after a steep drop in January. Strip out the category out and sales rose 0.3%. They were down 0.2% when including previous month's revisions. Core sales, which exclude volatile categories such as autos, building materials, and gas stations, and is a critical measure of the estimating GDP, increased by 0.1% in February, but was revised slightly lower for previous months, down 0.5%. If unchanged in March, these sales will be down 0.7% annual rate in the first quarter versus the fourth quarter. That would be the first quarterly decline since the COVID lockdowns. Overall, retail sales are up 1.5% in the last year, but is down 0.6% since peaking last September, and they're even weaker when factoring inflation, which is one of the key drivers of overall spending in the last few years. Retail sales are down 1.6% last year, have been stagnant for nearly 2 years since peaking in April of 22. And while recent data suggests the good side of the economy may already be in a recession, that cannot be said yet for the services side. However, the category for restaurant and bars, the only glimpse we get at services in the retail sales report, was the main culprit for the substantial downward revisions in prior months. The initial 0.7% gain in January for that category was revised to a 1% decline, and prior months were revised lower as well. So factoring in these revisions turns February's 0.4% gain into 1.9% decline. Putting this together, it appears that consumers are finally running out of their excess COVID savings, which had boosted by temporary and artificial government stimulus payments in 20 and 21, paid for by printing money. Expect more deterioration in retail sales in 2024 as higher borrowing costs and softening labor markets take their toll. If employment news, the initial claims for jobless benefits declined 1,000 last week to 209,000, while continuing claims rose 17,000 to 1.811 million. These figures also suggest that we are going to see continued job growth in the month of February. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up. We'll be right back.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com. A conservative take on issues important to Whatcom County and the Pacific Northwest.
If you get caught with drugs, it's a potential felony. That has worked in decades gone by to get people into treatment. What we have now does not get them into treatment. Neither does it save the addict, nor does it save the person who overdoses.
Lars Larson, noon to 3 each weekday on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Have you really sat down and taken a good look at how much you're paying for home and auto insurance? I'm Derek Barnes, and by now you might know that my wife Denise and I own D&D Insurance in Ferndale. Over the years, we've seen individuals paying $300, $400, and sometimes $500 a year too much for their home and auto insurance. If we're going to be good stewards of the money provided to us, I think it's prudent we review our insurance and financial needs. Likewise, we've been given families to take care of, and if something untimely were to happen to us, it's good to know that we can still provide for our families even when we're not around. Life insurance gives us that opportunity. Don't put it off for another day. Pick up the phone and start making some wise choices. Call the agents at D&D Insurance. They'll point you in the right direction. 392-8159 or visit us online at dndinsurance.com. We look forward to meeting you.
Fact, there's not a business out there that doesn't want to make a profit or find good, reliable employees. Small businesses sometimes need help training new or current employees. That's where we can help. Northwest Workforce Council can sometimes help with training costs for new employees through our on-the-job training program. We can also sometimes help with training of new employees to meet small business needs or to start a new line of business. Do you need some extra employees for a short-term project? Northwest Workforce Council may be able to assist with that as well. well. To learn more, go to nwc-connect.org and click on Business Services. That's nwc-connect.org for Business Services. Northwest Workforce Council is a proud partner of WorkSource and is an equal opportunity program. Auxiliary aids and services are available upon request for individuals with disabilities. Washington Relay Service 711. For more information about program funding, visit nwboard.org/about/federal-resources.
Inzaid!
When the ants go marching in, you need BioBug Pest Management, the latest pest control technology and long-term proactive solutions, lessening environmental impact while still providing you the protection you need. BioBug, service you trust, experience you expect. Locally owned and operated, serving Whatcom, Skagit, Island, and now North Snohomish County. Learn more at BioBug.com.
Dedicated to service, shining a light on local individuals, law enforcement, and groups giving back to our community. Brought to you by Nieder House of Luxury.
Angel, inspiration, tireless. Just a few words used to describe Shelly Larson of Fairhaven. According to Jane, Shelly's friend, our community angel Shelly routinely prepares delicious and nutritious meals for Bellingham's unhoused. And when a neighbor needs more than food, be it a ride to the clinic or a loving safe haven for a pet, Shelly is always ready to step in to help. Dedicated to Service joins Jane in recognizing a truly compassionate soul. Thank you, Shelly Larson, for your care and dedication to all our community members.
Brought to you by Nieder House of Luxury. Go see why they were voted best jewelry store in the Northwest. You'll find a beautiful selection of GIA certified and lab-grown diamonds, plus unique custom designs with an in-house jeweler. Find them at 21 Bellwether Way, Suite 107, next to Lombardi's back patio.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com. The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Harness the power of the sun, reduce your carbon footprint, and save on your energy bills. Explore the advantages of going solar with West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. Going to continue on with our economic reports for the week, including the February industrial production and capacity utilization report that came out this week. And industrial production rebounded in February, with the underlying details coming in stronger than the headline gain of 0.1%. The Federal Reserve highlighted that February's winter weather was milder than January's, boosting production. The manufacturing sector is the biggest source of strength in the report, with activity rising 0.8%. Non-auto manufacturing, which we think is this core version of industrial production, posted a gain of 0.8% in February. That's the largest in more than a year. Meanwhile, auto production jumped 1.9% as well. Notably, the production of high-tech equipment also rose for the 13th month in a row, as of 18.6% in the last year, by far the strongest growth in any major category. This likely reflects investment in AI as well as the reshoring of semiconductor production, which remains temporarily strong due to the CHIPS Act, despite broader weakness in the industrial sector. The mining sector rebounded in February too, increasing 2.2% as the largest monthly gain in over a year. Broad-based strength in oil and gas extraction as well as mineral extraction contributed. Finally, utility sector, which is volatile and largely dependent on weather, was the big source of weakness in the report. Activity plummeted 7.5% in February. That's the largest monthly decline since 2006 at the end of the unusually cold weather in January. Rapidly reduced demand for home heating. In other news, the Empire State Index, which is a measure of manufacturing sentiment in the Northeast, dropped unexpectedly to -20.9 in March from -2.4 in February. While the import prices increased 0.3% in February, export prices jumped by 0.8%. In the past year, import prices are down 0.8%, export prices are down 1.8%. And we're seeing an economist who sometimes I think I base a lot of confidence in what I've seen him write over the years. And Rogoff says that Biden, Trump favor blowing up the U.S. debt. This is a Harvard professor, economics professor, Kenneth Rogoff. He said both President Joe Biden and his predecessor and challenger Donald Trump risk sending the U.S. debt levels to a dangerous territory as Washington fails to grasp the era of ultra-low interest rates won't come back. Washington, in general, has a very relaxed attitude towards debt, and he said, I think it's going to be sorry about. Rogoff said this in his Bloomberg Television Wall Street Week with David Westin. It's just not the free lunch that Congress and perhaps the two presidential candidates have gotten used to. He said, while an exact upper limit for the federal debt cannot be known, it is estimated that the Congressional Budget Office to climb to 116% of gross domestic product by 2034. That's up from 99% today. And Rogoff warned that there will be challenges as the level increases. Former International Monetary Fund chief economist said that the escalating borrowing load will create volatility in inflation and interest rates and encourage political pressures on the Federal Reserve. Current CBO projections also leave a lot of room for accidents that drive debt even higher. He said, you're taking bigger and bigger risks. We will feel that. Both candidates may favor policies that drive borrowing higher, he said. Biden's speech suggested blowing up the debt. He said, even after the president in his State of the Union address last week proposed tax hikes to help pay for the spending priorities. I'm going to spend some more time on that one. I did yesterday's show as well. I'm going to spend some in-depth on that one, in fact. He said, we really have no idea what Donald Trump will do, but that's what he did the last time he was president. Good guess is he'll do it again, Rogoff said, referring to widening fiscal deficits when Trump was president in 2017 to 2021. The post-global financial crisis era, ultra-low interest rates helped to limit the impact of U.S. deficits, but the post-pandemic period is different, Rogoff said. The real benchmark interest rate is likely to be 1.5% to 2% rather than zero. He said that Fed policymakers' most recent projections imply a real or inflation-adjusted policy rate of 0.5%. The Harvard economist also said that Trump and Biden are certainly the two most protectionist presidents in a long time. Trump levied tariff hikes on China as well as U.S. allies during his term. Biden has maintained the higher tariffs on China, and Rogoff characterized his clean energy legislation as highly protectionist in its preferences for the U.S.-made products. Rogoff also differed from the Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman in his analysis of Trump's suggested 10% universal tariff on U.S. imports. Krugman said last month that it would impose limited damage on the economy. But he says it's one thing to talk about over a 50-year horizon when the impact would be limited, according to Rogoff. A sudden imposition is a very dislocating to the economy. He says, I would think it would tend to be very recessionary, inflationary. Introducing 10% tariffs, I think, would push up inflation and push up interest rates. So in a rather interesting interview that he had there last week. And while we're talking about all things political, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the green grift and the renewable energy's inefficiencies and how they are subsidies for the rich. Basically, Biden says we are building a clean energy future. But who is we? Well, you pay for it, he said, and his green cronies do most of the building. Lately, they're pouring more money into renewable energy. They promised to give us carbon-free power from the wind and sun. We have a new video that illustrates some problems with that, using scenes from a new documentary series called Juice, Power, politics and the grid. I'll repeat that later at the end of this commentary. But again, that video is called Juice, Power, Politics, and the Grid. Political scientist Roger Peichel notes it's quite intuitive for people to understand that there's a lot of power in solar energy. We feel the wind. The idea that you can get something for nothing, people find enormously appealing, especially in California, where politicians now require all new homes to have solar panels, all cars sold in 2035 to be zero emission, and the state's electricity coming from carbon-free resources by 2045. We're getting results, but not good ones. California's cost of electricity increased 3 times faster than the rest of America. People in Washington state pay about 11 cents per kilowatt hour, in Oregon 13 cents, in California now almost 30 cents per kilowatt hour. So do they at least get reliable energy for that? No. The big problem with wind and solar power, of course, is that it doesn't work when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine. Sometimes that happens when people most want to hear their air conditioning. So increased use of renewables is why blackouts are more common in California. Bloomberg Energy says that more than 25,000 in 2019, thousands more than the previous year. He said, we failed to predict and plan. Governor Gavin Newsom, they embrace scientific green fantasies. And requiring all new homes to have solar panels is a big reason that California has the most expensive housing in America. The average cost now is almost $800,000. But if you can afford that, you get government money for generating solar power. And the handout goes mostly to the rich. Poor people are more likely to rent. On top of that, the subsidy is inefficient. As their solar panels produce power during the day, when the sun is up, explains electrical engineer Lee Cordner, they're able to sell the excess power into the grid exactly when the grid doesn't need it. The grid is then inundated with solar power and can't use it all. Nevertheless, they get paid a very high price for that power. Nice for homeowners, taxpayers get paid for rich people to have highly subsidized solar system. But just to introduce one turbine, we have to extract 900 tons of steel, 2,500 tons of concrete, and 45 tons of non-renewable plastic, explains ecologist Merlin Tuttle. And they've got to transport that and burn fuel, getting it to all the carried across the world. None of these things that go into a turbine are renewable. And they wear out. Turbines never get shut down in just 10 years for maintenance. Maintenance costs almost as much as a new turbine, but it's worth it to green companies because of the government's handouts. Biden announced an $11 billion subsidy to bring clean energy into rural communities. That mostly encouraged people to put wind and solar in inappropriate places. Solar power makes sense in America's South and other sunny places, but on average, number of solar subsidies go to Minnesota. In the documentary, a Minnesota resident laughs and says, the state is about to give me a whole bunch of subsidies. Build solar in scenic, sunny Minnesota. The Juice series highlights the stupidity of government throwing money at green schemes pushed by the politically connected. When solar and wind become more efficient, they'll be cheaper and people will adopt them on their own. The politicians should stop their destructive meddling. You can watch the full documentary again. That name of that is JuiceTheSeries.com. JuiceTheSeries.com. I think you'll find it interesting. Thanks for listening. I'll be right back.
This is Tom Borthwick, the Diamond King. You think about your lady every 20 minutes. You think of how wonderful you are together, how she supports you, loves you every day. It's time to show her what you think about her and how much you love her. Right now is the perfect time because Diamond Days is on now at Borthwick Jewelers. 50% off certified diamonds, 33% off engagement rings, and 20% off semi-mounts at Borthwick Jewelers in Ferndale.
Look out, world, we're getting strong. The future's here and we belong.
She can stem, she can do more.
Like build a rocket and watch it soar.
Or clean the oceans and make the world a better place. Oh,
she can stem, so can you.
Find a cure,
invent something new.
There's no challenge in the world that she can't face.
Learn more at Chic and STEM. A message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Did you know one of the best investments you can make? It's in yourself. At My Computer Career, in just a few months, you could start your new career in the high-demand, recession-resistant field of information technology. Isn't it time you invest in you and start a career in networking, cybersecurity, AI, or upskill to boost your current IT career? So, get the ROI you deserve at My Computer Career. No experience necessary. Start now at mycomputercareer.edu.
Financial aid is available for qualified students, including the GI Bill.
There's a lot going on right now, and broadcasters are on the ground covering all of it, bringing you the weather, the traffic, and breaking news, all while entertaining you 24 hours a day. Someone needs to tell you what's going on around the world and in our hometowns, and that someone is us. We are free radio. We are always there. We are broadcasters. Visit wearebroadcasters.com or text radio to 52886 to learn more. Furnished by NAB and this station.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. If you got questions for me, you can always give me a call, 360-733-1200. Well, we touched on this same topic on yesterday's show, but I'm going to go ahead and spend more detail on it because I think that the average person needs to understand and be aware of what is going on with the proposed Biden budget, which basically we would say is a recipe for economic train wreck. Biden's fiscal year 25 budget has 10 massive tax increases, and he released his budget for 25 on Monday as something in his budget for everyone. Everyone who loves tax hikes, that is. Biden would raise taxes by $5 trillion over 10 years, and based on his budget, would allow an additional $2 trillion of middle-class tax cuts to expire after 2025. Between 2023 and 34, tax receipts would rise by 95%, according to the White House. Biden would aim most of those new taxes at small and big businesses, entrepreneurs, investors, and job and wealth creators. Middle-class workers and consumers would be devastated by the economic collateral damage. The Biden administration acts as if business capital is an endless fountain that'll never run dry, no matter how much the government siphons out of it, and no matter how severely they're taxed, investors will invest just as much, and businesses will keep building, hiring, and raising salaries. But unfortunately for the president, even if people were just as motivated to work and invest when the government reaps the rewards of their efforts, the simple fact is the matter is this. It's impossible to invest when the government doesn't allow you to keep, so the fountain eventually run dry. Biden's proposal includes dozens of tax hikes. Here are 10 of the ways that Biden's tax hikes will lead to America's economic downfall. Number one, it's a tax on income before it's earned, projected to raise $503 billion. Biden would impose tax on 25% on the unrealized gain for wealthy taxpayers. Taxing capital gains before income is received would be fundamental and detrimental redefinition of the income tax. Let's take, for example, the founder of a publicly traded company who, for simplicity's sake, holds all of his wealth in his 40% share of the company's stock, valued at $200 million. Now, suppose the stock price doubles relative to the previous year. This individual would face a 25% tax on that $200 million appreciation of his shares in the company, even though he didn't yet sell his stocks to receive any payment from the company. So to pay that $50 million tax he would owe, the executive would likely have to sell some stock. His large stock sale would drag down the price of the company's stock, making it more costly for the company to raise additional equity from selling shares. The timing of the government snatching away the company's capital is awful. The unrealized capital gains tax would slam companies right after big increases in stock price, a good sign that the company was finally primed for growth. The second point, second highest corporate income tax rate in the developed world would raise $1.35 trillion. Biden would also increase federal corporate income tax by a third, from 21% to 28%. The median state currently adds an additional 6% in corporate income tax. Combined, that means a tax of roughly one-third would apply to company profits before investors could receive their share of the earnings. The numerous investor-level taxes described above and below that we're going to talk about would apply on what's left over after the government first grabs its share of corporate profits. This 1-2 punch would clobber Americans' retirement accounts. Under Biden's budget, the combined U.S. federal and median state corporate tax rate would be the second highest among 38 developed countries in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, behind only Colombia. These tax hikes would drive many companies and jobs out of the U.S. and drive them where many other companies into the ground. The third one, doubling down, literally, double tax investment income, raised $692 billion. Biden's tax proposal would also nearly double the tax rate on long-term capital gains and dividends, including the net investment tax income, surtax. The current top rate of the class is 23.8%. Biden would raise it to 44.6%. Most states also layer their own capital gains taxes, typically taxing it as ordinary income. California, for example, taxes capital gains as high as 13.3%. With Biden's tax increases, the investment situation would be completely untenable. Consider the accumulation of taxes on $100 of gross earnings of tax at the top, for example, in California. You would have $8.84 in California corporate income tax. You'd have $25.52 in federal corporate income tax. You'd have $8.73 in California capital gains tax. You'd have $29.27 in federal capital gains tax. That means that you'd have left $27.63 of the original $100 that would trickle down to the investor whose capital was used to produce the profits. Federal and state governments would basically take the rest. But it'd get worse. After factoring in inflation, between investment and realization of long-term gains, investors would routinely be left with less than the original investment because capital gains taxes are imposed even on purely inflationary price increases. Individuals would take all the risk, the government would take the reward. Unfortunately, such extreme taxation would disincentivize investment and shrink the economy so much that even the government's largest share of the economic pie wouldn't amount to much. Tax revenues would also certainly fall because these policies as investors would move their highly mobile capital to avoid the excessive taxes. Number four, tax on small business income, $393 billion. The net investment income tax surtax generally applies to passive investment income for those earning above $125,000 to $250,000, depending on whether they're married or a single filing status. Biden's proposal would extend the tax to business income earned by those actively running a small business. Under Biden's plan, the tax on small business income would kick in starting between $200,000 and $400,000 of income, depending on filing status. These thresholds would not be indexed for inflation, so the tax would apply to smaller and smaller businesses over time. Number five, a higher tax rate and 28% withholding on top earners would raise $518 billion. So Biden's budget would increase the top statutory tax rate from 37 to 39.6, and seemingly modest change compared with other tax hikes. However, the plan would go much further by prohibiting companies from deducting compensation paid to top earners. So in other words, a company could not deduct what their salaries are from the corporate taxable income. So in other words, the 28% corporate tax rate would effectively be layered onto the individual tax rate. So if you work for a corporation, they pay you a salary, they would no longer be able to deduct that salary. They would have to also pay tax on that salary. Number six, quadruple tax on company stock repurchases. He signed into a 1% excise tax for stock buybacks as part of the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act. That now, within a year and a half later, he wants to quadruple it to 4%. That may sound like a small tax, but his excise tax is applied to the full value of the stock, not just the gain. Indeed, the tax applies to stock buybacks in the event of a decline in the stock value. So companies that are not in rapid growth mode may choose to return capital to shareholders either through dividends or stock buybacks. Companies may prefer to repurchase stock from investors in certain situations. Generally, they expect dividends to be regular payouts, so that's going to change. This number seven was a boost in IRS budget to $104 billion. Just a couple quick points here. 2021, the budget was $11.9 billion. He wants to increase it by another $104 billion. Less than 2 years ago, he signed in the $80 billion supplemental appropriation for the IRS over 10 years. Number eight was capitulation to the OECD global tax regime, basically $514 billion. This puts a 15% flat tax on everything the company earns, both in or outside the United States. I'm running out of time here, so I can't go into the deep detail here. Number nine was an end to Trump's middle-class tax cuts, would raise over $2 trillion. Basically, the middle tax cuts. He's hinted at wanting to extend large middle-class tax cuts for those making less than $400,000, estimated to be worth about over $2 trillion over 10 years. The administration wants to claim the $2 trillion is less than added deficits, allowing the middle-class tax cuts to expire. And number 10 was double the tax on death. Basically, he wants to raise $84 billion, so he would take away stepped-up basis. But in conclusion, Biden's message to entrepreneurs and wealth creators is clear. If despite all the taxes and regulations placed in your way, you successfully manage during your lifetime to build a business or create wealth through your ideas and hard work, the government can take away your legacy in a heartbeat. The obvious consequences of the government seizing people's property at every turn to redistribute it and to fund the government bureaucracy is that people would create less, work less, and innovate less. In short, Biden's tax and spend agenda is a recipe for America's decline. Thanks for listening. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. Don't forget our live shows on Saturdays at 11. You got questions for us, you can always give me a call, 360-733-1200. Thanks, and have a great week.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.